Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. The podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies and is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Justin Hakes. Today, we're uncovering a new proposal to increase homeowners' insurance rates in North Carolina, how outraged policyholders are pushing back. Plus, state legislative sessions are underway, the new bills that could impact the insurance industry, and how NAMIC state advocates are prioritizing these issues. But first, North Carolina insurance officials got an earful about a new proposal to increase homeowners' insurance rates by an average 42% statewide. As NAMIC's Lauren Anderson reports, the budget-busting increase could make owning a home more challenging for low and fixed-income families.
A public hearing about a proposed homeowners insurance rate hike went on for 6 hours as hundreds of people told the North Carolina Department of Insurance they simply can't afford the higher premiums.
I find it utterly insulting that the insurance industry is asking for this.
Everyone has all sorts of reasons about why they feel like that's unfair.
These rate increases to insurance, homeowners insurance, does not need to happen.
Statewide, the average increase requested by the North Carolina Rate Bureau is 42%, and as much as 99% for homes along the coast. The proposed increases are driven by converging pressures that make up the new era of risk, including inflation, climate change, regulatory hurdles, and reinsurance capacity. 2023 was the worst ever year in insurance losses due to climate-related disasters, with 2022 the worst year prior to that. The combined damage for both years exceeded $257 billion, according to the NOAA National Centers for Environmental Information. North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey is up for re-election this year. He was notably absent from the meeting, but took the unusual step of releasing a video in which he explained the rate increase approval process. He also noted that he has negotiated down rate hike proposals in the past.
I know that number may sound shocking at first, but as your insurance commissioner, I am committed to fighting for lower rates for you, the consumer. That's exactly what I've done in the past and will continue to do this year.
In 2020, the North Carolina Rate Bureau requested an average increase of 24.5%. Ultimately, they settled for 7.9%. For Insurance Uncovered, I'm Lauren Anderson.
The State Department of Insurance has received more than 9,000 written comments, and more are expected before a comment period closes on February 2nd. If the rate increases are approved, homeowners could see changes to their premiums as early as August 1. As stakeholders and government agencies push a future where electric vehicles replace gas-powered cars and trucks, a new white paper from NAMIC explains the many questions that remain unanswered regarding the realities of electric vehicle capabilities, consumer appeal, and the risks they create. NAMIC Director of Auto and Underwriting Policy Tony Cotto says the new paper outlines opportunities and potential risks of further electrification for both insurance carriers and consumers alike.
Availability of this technology is a great development. This is more options for people. It's a technology that was not possible at a mass scale previously. But, you know, when these car makers are doing things that were science fiction just a few years ago, at the same time, we have to accept that there are new risks that come with those developments. And we need to start separating some fact from fiction and some really good and slick marketing and really big government programs from the realities of what car buyers are seeing, what car dealers are seeing, and eventually what the claims that our members are seeing when these things are involved in crashes, because they will be involved in crashes. So when you start setting the reality, everyone thinks that they're everywhere, when in reality of 20 million cars sold last year, fewer than a million would qualify as electric vehicles.
You can find the paper titled Insuring the Future, Electric Vehicles, on NAMIC's website under Public Policy Papers. Illinois had the most tornadoes of any state in 2023. The National Weather Service says a record 120 tornadoes touched down in the state last year, which is more than triple the amount in 2022, when there were 39. While it's not unusual for parts of Illinois to experience tornadoes in extreme weather, activity started early last year. For the first time in the state's recorded history, tornadoes touched down in January, February, and March. On a national scale, forecasters say climate change certainly has an impact on the conditions that create tornadoes, such as warmer temperatures. However, Brett Borchardt of the National Weather Service told Fox 32 Chicago that doesn't necessarily mean Illinois will see a higher frequency of tornadoes this year.
Typically, severe weather strikes as early as March. We get maybe 1 or 2 days in an average March with severe weather, and it only increases from there.
Alabama had the second place record in 2023 with 101 tornadoes, and Texas and Colorado tied for third with 89. The 2024 legislative season is in full swing. On today's unscripted segment, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldridge talks with the association's Vice President of State Affairs, John Schnautz, about new bills brewing in legislatures across the country and how they could impact the insurance industry.
Well, here we are in January of 2024, and this time of year at NAMIC is the start of a new season, sort of like the Christmas season or the football season, but for us, it's the legislative season. We have state legislatures all around the country getting active and having their legislative sessions in various formats and places around the country. Nearly every state, I think, is in session. John, I think it's nearly all but four, I think, are in session right now. And so lots of activity on the NAMIC advocacy front and the state advocacy side. And so that's what we're going to focus on today in the unscripted portion of the program. So joining me is John Schnautz. John is actually NAMIC's newest vice president. Congratulations, John, on your new promotion. John is our vice president of state affairs, leads our state advocacy team and our regional vice presidents that are all around the country representing NAMIC members in state houses and state insurance departments every day. Very full plate of legislative activity. And so that's what we're going to focus on here today. Lots of stuff going on in the industry. So, John, thanks for joining us and thanks for all the work you do on behalf of the NAMIC membership.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
Well, let's kick it off with, you know, we could go in lots of places, but let's start with this one. So, you know, we see state legislatures kind of begin to address all of the issues that the industry has been wrestling with in 2023 and really into 2022, the availability and affordability issues, the reinsurance capacity issues, the litigation environments, all kind of colliding, the climate issues into what we've been talking about is the new era of risk. We've talked about it on this podcast before. Part of that would be a legislative reaction to this new era of risk. So, John, where are we seeing states that are maybe we can be, you know, aggressive in terms of being offensive, a lot of defense being played? What sort of is our priority as it relates to this new era of risk and the legislative fallout that we see here?
Thank you, Neil. I guess first, I listened to your podcast with Jimmy last month, and I'll start with a segue to federal. One of our strongest advocacy commitments, most fundamental, is, of course, to state-based regulation. That was a lot of what you talked about with Jimmy, was keeping the federal government in its lane. This is the time of the year that tests that commitment because we see all the great ideas that states are coming up with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to talk about kind of in the pantheon of the new era of risk, you know, thinking about the four categories we've kind of spelled out there. The interesting thing about those is there's really not a lot that states can do about some of them. Climate change, for example, you know, whatever anyone thinks might should be done about it, a lot of it, it's not amenable to a one state kind of answer.
Yeah, state can't pass a bill to just outlaw climate change, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. They'll try, but it may not work. And then inflation is similar in some respects, you know, general inflation and even inflation in specific sectors that have more of an impact on our members. They don't really, a lot of those issues don't have state answers. They can make them worse, but not better. So that really leaves reinsurance and then legal system issues. On the reinsurance side, of course, we've been very active there in trying to identify states that have unrealistic requirements, things that aren't necessary for solvency, try to address those. But a lot of the reinsurance pressures are hard for states to specifically address. Legal system abuse, you know, that's the one area where states really do have some levers to pull. Of course, the political process of getting those passed you know, often makes a knife fight look like polite conversation. They're some of the hardest battles we have. But last year, for example, our single biggest advocacy win at the state level, probably in several years, was the Florida improvements to the tort system, trying to get at one-way attorney's fees and assignment of benefits and some of the issues that made that market even more challenging than it would otherwise be. This year, you know, we'll be looking at other states where improvements can be made there in the tort world. You know, in the near term, Georgia and Louisiana are both good targets. They have work that can clearly be done. It's going to be challenges in both, but those are good targets. And then, of course, as you alluded to, we'll be playing a lot of defense. For a lot of state legislators, you know, all they really know about insurance is they're hearing from constituents that it's more expensive and harder to get. And many of the intuitions they're going to have about what to do about those things are exactly wrong. You know, they'll be, well, let's regulate the price. Let's make insurers right in places where they're pulling back for very good reason. And a big part of our state advocacy every year, and especially this year, is countering those intuitions and pointing them in other directions.
Indeed. And I have a feeling we will have a full plate of those this year in lots of places around the country. So let's shift a little bit here. Let's talk about a couple of states specifically. California, lots going on. Everybody has seen, you know, maybe nowhere else that the sort of moniker of the new era of risk sort of living and breathing than in California as it relates to wildfire risk. And certainly the litigation environment in California ain't very friendly. Same thing with the regulatory environment in terms of getting things done there, price changes, et cetera. So let's look at California. We also have insurers that have decided they don't need to take on more risk in California, creating national headlines in some capacity. So what do we expect there? We talk about the wildfire issue specifically, but there are also, I suspect, going to be a number of bad ideas in California as policymakers try to wrestle with what's going on in the insurance marketplace there.
Sure. So for California specifically, I think our agenda there legislatively will be almost entirely defensive. There'll be some bad ideas that are proposed, some that we hope won't be. We'll find that out in the next couple of months as they hit some deadlines. We've been engaged, of course, long-term on trying to get solutions to problems that don't need legislative solutions. You know, a lot of the things the department is doing, for example, not crediting reinsurance, the way they do assessments, all those kinds of issues, they can be addressed without legislation. And that's a long-term project for us. In terms of what other states are going to do on similar issues, I think we have already seen and will continue to see more states look at residual markets. Colorado last year, you know, created a FAIR plan. It's one of the first ones in quite some time, more than a decade, I think. Then on the other end of the political spectrum, you know, Idaho right now is looking at legislation to provide state funded reinsurance specific to Idaho. They think that's sort of part of their availability and affordability issue. Frankly, it probably isn't, but you know, we're going to see those kinds of approaches too. You know, I mentioned before that there's not a lot that states can do per se about climate change. I think that's true, but of course, states and even localities can do quite a bit about some of the issues related to climate change. You know, we've talked about before, so much more development over the last few decades, and even more recently in coastal areas or in areas that are prone to wildfire. Those are issues where states really do have some things they can do. Now, a lot of those things are not politically viable, but we're trying to find common ground on some areas that are around resiliency and mitigation. States are getting more interested in providing direct funding for mitigation for property, modeled on some things that Alabama did. So I think, you know, the devil's in the details about whether those are good programs or not, but they're at least an opportunity for us to advance something positive. I think you'll also see more activity, both federally and at the state level, on catastrophe and disaster savings accounts, you know, giving tax advantage treatment to preparation. That's a good area for some common ground for us to be proactive.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the Alabama program, the fortified housing program there is really gotten some notice in other places, rightfully so. And hopefully some other states will follow suit because the early returns are pretty favorable there. And it's a program that I think others could mimic, certainly. So let's look at another state. Illinois used to be touted as maybe the best regulatory environment in the country. That's probably changed over the years. And last year in particular, there was one of the worst bills I've ever seen, actually, in my 25 years of being here, in a state that basically would have brought, you know, Prop 103 style rate regulation, underwriting restrictions, et cetera, to Illinois, to the personal lines market in Illinois. So we were able to defeat that bill, thankfully. One thing we've learned in Illinois is nothing's ever dead forever. And the same folks that thought that was a good idea last year are still there. And so what do we think the prospects of that coming back are here this session?
Yeah, so the prospects of it coming back are somewhere between very likely and definite in terms of being filed. It hasn't been filed yet, but just a quick level or table setting as to what was in that bill. You're right. I mean, it was a soup with a little something from everything in the spice rack of badness, as far as we're concerned. It was a risk-based pricing aspect. You know, it outright banned somewhere around 15 common rating factors. And then for what was left, which was relatively little, it established kind of a disparate impact standard for evaluating those. Then on top of that, of course, it changed the whole rating system, taking it from what it is now to prior approval. So, you know, that bill is going to be filed again. As I said, we will obviously oppose it again. As you noted, you know, Illinois, it's interesting in that it has probably the most market-friendly rating law of any state, despite, you know, politically being a state for which that's not true for a whole lot of industries. So we have something to preserve there. One of the things that we're going to do this year that we didn't have in our arsenal last year is trying to marshal more empirical evidence to really back our assertion that whatever you think about the benefits of prior approval, it really doesn't work. I mean, it's a very inefficient way to try to regulate something that the market does a better job through competition of regulating. So I think we're gonna add that evidence to our arsenal of arguments, and then do some other things. We will be fully armored on the ground for that fight. I will say, you know, you alluded more broadly to what states are doing on rating. We saw last year kind of the other end of the political spectrum fight on rating. Doing air quotes that no one can see around the term, but you know, the whole anti-ESG issue. So that was, you know, states, Texas, for example, had a bill that said you can't rate or underwrite based on an ESG score. And ESG, for everyone's environmental, social, and governance, pretty big political fight going on right now beyond insurance. And our initial response to that bill was, well, you can certainly think of some things that you could call environmental, social, or governance related that almost everybody would agree is a reasonable rating consideration. So we had some success on that bill, but it's not a threat on risk-based pricing that's limited to the left. You know, we saw that last year, and I think we'll see it again. And then, you know, in other states, just there's an evolution of what you see coming from the other way. New York, for example, this year, we're going to have a significant discussion around a bill to prohibit consideration of how much affordable housing is included in multifamily property, you know, whether that's a legitimate rating factor or not.
I think I saw that recently. The governor recently even made some remarks about that.
Yeah, she included a version of it in her budget proposal, which is essentially her legislative agenda. So so we're gonna see that fight continue to evolve around the country. It's not going anywhere, but it will take new forms, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, those topics, you know, they're obviously in one sense not necessarily new. You know, we've been having various battles as it relates to underwriting factors for years. It was sort of, you know, confined to the credit-based insurance scoring discussion, but now it's a child that's had, you know, many cousins, right? That has grown into all of these other underwriting restriction bills that are not just limited to credit scoring, credit-based insurance scoring anymore. And that's what we're seeing in like in New York and Illinois, and there'll be other states that have multiple attempts to restrict insurers' ability to underwrite. That's challenging issues for the industry, no doubt. So one other new topic, reasonably new in terms of insurance industry issues, proving once again that every issue has an insurance angle to it, artificial intelligence. So obviously lots of tentacles throughout the broader economy and virtually every industry exploring ways in which machine learning and artificial intelligence might make their businesses more efficient. Insurers are no different. There are issues in the industry. This may be the subject of some federal discussion at some point in time, although likely protracted and lengthy in terms of any sort of resolution there. But states tend to act pretty fast. And I know that there's some discussion at the NAIC on this topic as well. So what are we seeing there?
Yeah, so I think you're right. You know, the lack of Congress being able to, very unlikely that they would produce a national framework for regulating AI legislatively. So we are seeing states step into that void. I guess I'd point to a couple of examples we've seen of kind of define the poles of what you would see here on different approaches states could take. So one, and this is I think it's a draft bill from Delaware. I don't know that it's been filed yet, but it is specifically aimed at insurer use of AI. So for example, if you're using AI or machine learning or some kind of algorithm in making claims decisions, that you would have to have a human at the back of that process, that it basically can't be fully turned over to AI. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a disclosure component around that. So we're looking at that bill, probably have some concerns with it, but that's one approach, very specific. The other approach is more along the lines of kind of what we've seen in the last few years with data privacy regulation, for example, meaning Virginia has a bill like this, all kinds of industries, but one of those is insurance. And so, you know, that's going to obviously have less specific application to us, but it still could be a big deal and a concern depending on what that general application is like. You know, as you know, we added a specific item to our state advocacy agenda this year on AI, machine learning, and I guess the early returns suggest that was probably called for because, hey, now there's some bills on it specific to it. And then, of course, you know, the spillover to our last topic is fairly obvious. I mean, one of the questions that's going to get asked about AI that already is, you know, can AI be biased in a way that results in unfair discrimination? What does that look like? That issue is going to inevitably come up on some of those bills and will be one that we'll have concerns about depending on how states define that.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's, I think, in the future here going to be a large part of our conversation as insurers continue to explore new technologies and new ways to approach rating and underwriting. It always generates new scrutiny from policymakers. It's just sort of part of the dance here that we deal with. Well, John, listen, thanks for joining us today. A lot going on in lots of places. The NAMIC advocacy team is the best in the business, I say, and you get to lead them every day on the state side. And we don't lack for issues in terms of advocating for member interests. Obviously, the member companies listening, these are your folks too. They're your eyes and ears on the ground in your state. If you've got an issue with a legislative matter or an issue with the Department of Insurance, feel free to reach out to John or any of the regional vice presidents. They're your sort of first line of defense here. And so we encourage you to engage with them and have a dialogue with them. Trust me, they welcome the feedback and welcome the interaction with member companies and do so daily. So thanks again, John, for all the work you and the team do every day. I used to do it myself. I know how challenging it can be. I grew up in a time when at least it was a little less challenging than it is now for you guys. You know, it's what we're here for. It's what NAMIC exists for, is to represent member companies in states and in Washington. So thanks for all the work you and the team do every day.
Thank you, Neil. We'll keep fighting the good fight.
Do so. Thanks again, John.
The NAMIC state team will host regional in-session calls to provide you with legislative updates and receive input from members. Members can contact their region's state advocate for more information on calls and updates. And that's all for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back February 7th when we look at the January reinsurance renewals with Aon and discuss how it sets the stage for an interesting year ahead. Until next time, I'm Justin Hakes. Have a great day.